charming pot.
Oh. Oh, my head. Oh, man, that must have been some party. Someone tell that little man with the hammer to stop knocking on my poor skull. All right, okay, try sitting up. I got it, that's better. Stand up. Okay, good. Where am I? Old stone walls, vaulted ceiling, nice fat candles. Sarcophagus with my name on it. Well, that's weird. What's that on top of it? It looks like that old microphone I used to use when I was on Hotcast. Now that's really weird. Looks like there's a note next to it.
Dear Mistress, sorry to reanimate you without your consent, but we're getting the show back together and knew you'd be ticked if you missed out. We're calling it Postmortem Reanimated. So try to stick with the theme. Thanks, Chris Baker. P.S. Scully says he's sorry about mistaking the rat poison for roofies and killing you. He hopes you won't hold a grudge.
Great. Just great. Welcome to your afterlife, courtesy of that stoner sorry excuse for an ex-human. Perfect. Oh well, at least I'm back. I just need to get out of here and go back to my parlor. Stone walls are just too hard to decorate. Who's that in the corner? Oh, it's you, my darling darklings. Well, hopefully he left the crypt unlocked. Good. Follow me. The cemetery looks so beautiful by moonlight, doesn't it? Just a short walk and we should be back to the house. With luck, it'll be just how I left it. Reanimated. Huh. How Lovecraftian. Well, that sounds like a good conversation to have, huh? Well, like many of you, one of the great sports of my youth was sneaking into the local movie theater so I could catch the latest horror film. One of my illicit forays into the coveted rated R arena happened one Saturday night with the then newly released Reanimator. I remember it being campy and a little cheesy, with the radiator fluid-colored reanimation serum and the talking head in a tray gag. Little did I realize at the time that the movie was inspired by a story by Howard Phillips Lovecraft. H.P. Lovecraft was born on August 20th, 1890, in the family home in Providence, Rhode Island. He was born to Sarah Susan Phillips Lovecraft and Winfield Scott Lovecraft, who was a traveling salesman for Gorham & Co., which was a silversmithy of Providence. Lovecraft showed a talent for the word at a very young age. He began reciting poetry at the age of 2, began reading when he was 3, and by the time he was 6 or 7, he was already writing. When Lovecraft was 8, his father, who had been institutionalized for several years, died of syphilis. After his father's passing, Lovecraft was brought up by his mother, his aunts, and his grandfather. His family was very well-to-do. Because they were able to trace their bloodlines from their home in Providence all the way back to 15th century England, they felt themselves to be of the aristocracy of Providence. The pressure to keep up appearances in the public eye was enormous. Though his mother was what we'd term today an overprotective helicopter mom, she had a puritanical view which minimized any physical expression of love towards her child. He was seldom hugged or kissed, which was devastating to Lovecraft as a child and created intimacy issues for him during his adulthood. His grandfather, Whipple Van Buren Phillips, was a successful industrialist and took a strong interest in the young Lovecraft's upbringing. He told the boy ghost stories starting around the age of 4, and it was in his extensive attic library that Lovecraft learned his passion for books. In fact, his obsession with the 18th and 19th century was born from reading this literature and formed in him a desire to be a gentleman of that era rather than his own. In that library, he learned about astronomy, which later became an underlying theme of his stories. He read The Thousand Nights and One Night, known to most of us as the Arabian Nights. He even went so far as to adopt the pseudonym Abdul al-Hazred after reading the book. Lovecraft fans will recognize it to be the name of the ill-fated Mad Arab of the mythical Necronomicon. He came to love the attic library so much, it appeared to his mother that he was insecure and even afraid of other people. This came to be such a driving thought in her head that she created her own story around it, saying that he was so hideous, he hid in the attic. She said this enough to him and to the neighbors that he eventually believed it. The resulting sense of isolation, coupled with his discovery of the works of Edgar Allan Poe, populated his imagination with dark beings. He called these beings night gods and imagined they snatched him up at night and took him to twisted cities built from black masonry. When he began to write, he copied Poe's style, but destroyed the bulk of it because he felt it unworthy. It was shortly after this he first went to high school. Realizing he had no talent for mathematics, crushed his dream of becoming an astronomer. He then quit school, claiming he had a nervous breakdown. This breakdown was no doubt helped along by his grandfather's loss of his fortune and his subsequent death. Lovecraft never went back to school, and indeed, he became an almost complete recluse from 1908 until 1917. It was then he discovered the world of pulp magazines, inspiring him to begin publishing for the very first time. At the urging of his friends, he began to earn some money ghostwriting stories and articles for people like Harry Houdini. His first published works were xenophobic diatribes reflecting the worst ideas of American society at the time. He had a deep worry of the interbreeding of the races, and indeed, this was likely tied in with the idea of breeding in general, as he was uninterested and possibly even afraid of sex. These pieces attracted other writers' attention, some agreeing with him and others in opposition to his racism, all of them writing to him with their thoughts on that and other topics. He entered into what would become a lifelong passion for correspondence with others. By the end of his life, he had written thousands upon thousands of letters to his readers and other writers. A perk of his letter writing was that it offered him the opportunity of trying out his unpublished stories on his correspondence. In July of 1917, he published Dagon, a creepy little tale of a seaman trapped on a strange, diseased shore, black sun beaming down on him. This, I believe, was the first notable dark tale by Lovecraft, and it was from this that he developed his particular style of horror. Lovecraft's mother died of a mishandled gallbladder operation in May of 1921. Because of a nervous breakdown, which seems to be a catchphrase for all mental troubles of the era, she had been residing for several years in the same asylum as had her husband previously. Lovecraft was devastated by her death, but even so felt well enough to attend an amateur journalism convention several weeks later. It was there he met his wife, Sonia Haft Green. Ironically, given his xenophobia towards both Russians and Jews, she was a Russian Jew. Even so, they discovered their common ground was their passion for literature and their imaginations. During one of their walks, they heard a strange and sinister noise which later influenced one of Lovecraft's works. However, he encouraged her to write it instead. The resulting story, The Horror at Martin's Beach, was published in 1923. Sonia had enticed him to visit New York City, as she knew in order for him to realize the full extent of his writing talent and make the right business connections, he would have to leave Providence and move to New York. March of 1923 saw the birth of Weird Tales magazine. It became a highly influential venue for stories of the strange and horrifying, something which was gaining popularity by leaps and bounds in the 1920s and 30s. Fans of the magazine will remember that it eventually contained the who's who of horror and science fiction, starting the careers of such greats as Ray Bradbury, Tennessee Williams, and of course H.P. Lovecraft himself. He regarded it as the best outlet for his stories, submitting five of them at the urging of Sonia and his friends. All of them were purchased, and thus began a lifelong association of Weird Tales magazine and Lovecraft. Sonia convinced Lovecraft to marry her. On March 3, 1924, they married, to the outrage of his aunts, who believed her to be beneath him. However, Sonia had her hands full with a strange sort of man-child with delusions of gentility, since Lovecraft never deigned to work at anything other than his writing. 1922 through 24 saw him developing several elements which would weave their way through his stories: Miskatonic University, Arkham Town, and the mad Arab Abdul Azred. That character was the one credited with writing the famous Necronomicon. That book was never meant to be a story per se. It was meant to reference something, to imply something much larger and darker. It became a huge influence on writers and later filmmakers, and seemed to take on a dark life of its own with its collection of summoning spells meant to break down the walls between the universes and invite in all manner of terrifying tentacle beings from other worlds which would enslave us and destroy the planet. His well-known early stories, The Dunwich Horror and The Rats in the Walls, showcased his ability to draw in the reader viscerally by building a tense and multi-layered atmosphere. You could hear the sounds the protagonist heard, could feel the shadows creeping up on you. This distinctive style of writing made Lovecraft's brand of horror believable and all the more terrifying for it. Unfortunately for Lovecraft, living in New York brought out the worst of his classism and xenophobia. His wife lost her hat shop, and since he had no interest in finding work, it fell to her to look for income. She had a job offer in Cleveland, Ohio, which she took, traveling back and forth for quite a while. But continued financial struggles forced him to move back to Providence and to his aunt's in April 1926. The best of his writing began to flow once he got home, and he began fleshing out the ideas outlined during his time in New York. The Call of Cthulhu was born, a mixture of horror and invented anthropology. Surprisingly, he never typed it out or published it, likely because he saw no worth in its longer story. Sonia continued to be a part of his life, and he still said he loved her, but when she offered to move to Providence, his aunts forbade it. They felt it would be a stain on the family honor to have a tradeswoman married to their nephew, and predictably, the two divorced. The Color of Space, a tale of a family beset by a strange series of events following a meteorite crash on their property, and The Dunwich Horror, inspired by Lovecraft's discovery of some standing stones in Massachusetts, showed his further mastery of atmosphere and horror. He created more of what we know as the Old Ones, Cthulhu, Yog-Sothoth, and he referenced the Necronomicon and Miskatonic University. These stories won him his biggest paydays to date, but in spite of their success, Lovecraft failed to follow up and write again for more than a year after publishing those stories in Weird Tales. His writings of his terrors, the night terrors, which were a holdover of his childhood, had changed from indescribable to things he described in minute, horrifying detail. His later years were plagued by hardships. His favorite aunt died, and one of his closest correspondents had committed suicide. His later stories were longer and, unfortunately, harder to sell. He fell back to ghostwriting to keep money coming in the door. He died on March 15, 1937, of intestinal cancer. He was 46 years old. Lovecraft, like several writers of the genre, didn't become widely read until after his death, when Arkham Press was created for the purpose of distributing his works in the more legitimate route of the book publishing house. Lovecraft was one of those great pioneers of horror and science fiction, using his imagination to terrify generations yet to come. His stories have influenced numerous writers and movie makers. Considering his sheltered and reclusive beginnings, the man had an impressively long reach. Ah, here we are, back at the old manse. Feels so good to be back home. Come on into the parlor and we'll have a cup of tea. Hey, what the hell is a stripper pole doing in the middle of my parlor? Tell me those are not condoms on my antique fainting couch. Listen, guys, can you show yourselves out? I really need to deal with this. Bloody kisses to you all. Scully! Scully! Where are you, you little twerp?
I'm going now. Heaven help you.
Please like and follow the podcast. Stalk us on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Links in the description. And help us by sharing Hauntcast with all your haunt and Halloween brethren. Until next time, stay scary.